Hey, Joel.
Yo, dude.
What is the worst whiskey you've ever tasted?
All right, you're gonna have to break that, narrow that down, like flip by category, or just in general. will flavored whiskey be a part of that?
Yeah.
Cause that won't be fair. I don't know. I mean, any flavor of whiskey is gonna be bad.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
So you say non-flavored?
Okay, non-flavored.
Oh, all right. I'm ready now. Because if I say a flavor whiskey, they'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. The worst whiskey I ever had. Sorry, Texas.
Oh. Whoa.
Baby Blue.
About really? That's the worst.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
The reason I ask is because tonight we had something that tasted so horrible.
Oh, yeah, we did. That was a cocktail, though.
It was a cocktail made with...
Non-alcoholic, right?
Made with a non-alcoholic whiskey. And that...
Yeah. It was like that Robitussin.
Oh, it was
NyQuil.
Just, it was like bad medicine.
Medicinal.
It was, oh. And it had a long aftertaste that they kind of like, I could tell they like engineered it to have that long aftertaste,
mm-hmm.
You know, to kind of
like
replicate what whiskey
so
does.
So much stuff to take that aftertaste. Like that even good. After the, didn't have it after the ginger beer, but from what we heard that it was bitter.
Just the smell alone was like bizarre.
My thing is, I probably have had worse whiskey than Baby Blue, but they've probably been in cocktails, and I never had them straight.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I would say as far
covered
as straight,
up.
I would say Baby Blue.
Yeah. It's in the lineup to review. We're going to cover Baby Blue.
Great. Hey, I might change my ways. I don't know. That's a beautiful thing about this podcast.
You know what is shocking to me is how much that costs overseas.
What?
Like
Baby Blue?
Yeah, like not this year's, but last year's, the year before, the OSWA Awards, Baby Blue showed up in that, and it cost, for them to buy it over there, they were paying £70 for a bottle of that. And it was like, what, $30 here?
Yeah. I know they have a different, another variant of the Baby Blue. It's like a higher proof version of it.
Oh,
I can't remember
okay.
what it's called. But,
Maybe, does it look the same?
I think it's a darker label.
This was the same label, the blue. Yeah.
Okay. All right,
yeah,
well,
anyway.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. Maybe my mind will be changed. I try not to hate on Balcones so much on this podcast, but it's just not my flavor profile. If anything, I would give credit to that rye that they get.
I haven't touched that in so long, I don't remember what it's like, but yeah. Any of their other stuff, though, like that malt, oof, no. Yeah, anyway. Let's not focus on this too much.
Yeah, sorry, Balcones. don't judge us. Well,
yeah.
I'm guarantee you.
You're gonna put out something
we're,
that's gonna blow
yeah,
us away.
We're gonna, yeah, because there's something out there that I've seen some whiskey tubers that I have faith in.
Love it.
That came across a single barrel of one of their malts or something, and they raved about it, and they were shocked because of. You know, when you're in the bourbon, scotch game, even though you're a malt guy, their malt is different. And I think it's the age, because you're used to 10, to 12, to 15. Most of their stuff is like 2.
2 years.
Yeah, so it's different for
it's
you.
Totally different.
And then a bourbon guy coming to that profile with a 2-year-old malt product is just... I don't know. It just doesn't add up. It's just...
Uh-huh.
Not our thing. But who knows? Hey, they're trying and they're out there for a reason. People like them. people like them. They're buying their stuff.
Yeah.
So I can't hate. But I got the low end.
Today, we're doing a low end and high end.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Well,
allocated.
I want to say allocated.
Okay.
I would say Kentucky release only.
So maybe. Oh, okay.
All right. So in Kentucky, or probably in other markets, I haven't seen it here in Wisconsin. But it's a Brown-Forman product. Oh. You know, Jack Daniel's, Old Forester, Woodford Reserve.
Okay.
They came out with the...
You're one of your favorite profiles.
Yeah, one of my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have reviewed a lot of Brown-Forman products on this podcast.
Yeah.
Most of it has been Jack Daniel's and some Old Forester. But yeah. One in particular they came out with. The bourbon people probably know about this. Cooper's Craft 100 Proof. Now they have a 86 proof version of this, I want to say. I know that it looks like it's brand new. I mean, it kind of is.
Just pour the neck out of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
30 to 35 bucks.
All right.
This product. I hear that the 86 proof is pretty good. Probably not as expensive as this, even though it's not that expensive. Here's the specs. 75% corn, 15% rye, and 10% malted barley for the mash bill. And this is probably at least 4 years old. And like I told you, the price is 30 to 35. Now here, it's what Brown-Forman is saying about Cooper's Craft. It says, Cooper's Craft Barrel Reserve is born from our one-of-a-kind, chiseled, and charred American white oak barrel. This expression is bold and complex Kentucky bourbon bottled at 100 proof.
Chiseled? What does that mean?
You got me.
Or is it just a fluff word thrown in there to make it sound better than just barrel?
I guess so. Now, when you think of Brown-Forman, usually you like the ones that we just mentioned before. Jack Daniel's, Woodford Reserve, Old Forester.
Yeah. Chiseled and charred, it says.
But the thing about Cooper's Craft, they said that they're... and this is a reserve version of the regular Cooper's Craft, I guess. Apparently, they use different barrels with this one. It says that it has grooves in the staves.
Oh.
Which is different from, Old Forester 100 proof or whatever. Even though they have the same ABV, but they have a lot of differences in it, including the mash bill. So, we'll see. Apparently, these special grooves increase the barrel's interior surface area.
Yeah.
Allowing for more interaction between whiskey and barrel.
It's like stave aging.
Yeah.
But
kind of
in a barrel.
Yeah.
It's like half stave, half barrel.
I'm assuming that's what Maker's does, right? They use staves, but is it in a barrel?
I don't know.
They use staves.
No, they do.
Yeah.
They say that they do. Oh.
Make it smart.
Okay, I didn't know that. Huh.
Which, we gotta review them too, because they're very transparent too with the saves that they use and whatever.
Okay.
This what do you smell
definitely
on that
got
nose?
That
classic
Brown-Forman profile.
Couple episodes.
But less sweet, sugary sweet, and syrupy than
now, think about
Old
another,
Forester.
Think about another Brown-Forman product that we did review a couple episodes back as my low-end, Early Times. That's Brown-Forman as well.
Yeah.
Even though Sazerac just bought them out. And that was a Sazerac one. but it's kind of similar nose.
Mm-hmm. Kind of dry? No, I like it.
Yeah.
Youthful?
I think...
It's youthful, you can tell.
To me, it seems a little bit older than four.
Really?
To me.
It doesn't have an age statement.
Yeah, no age statement. Just a classic bourbon smell.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the early times.
I think I like the smell of this better than Old Forester. Because Old Forester is a little more syrupy sweet.
Yeah, this is kind of up your alley about not being rough around the edges. But, you know, you get the oakiness.
Yeah.
You get the wood char.
Oh, this is just going to get better. You know, another inch or two lower in the bottle. All right.
That's great. That's good.
That's great. Not sweet, but not too dry. Fiery, youthful, but not like rough. Yeah, it's not rough.
It's not off-putting at all. It's great. Now, I wish I would have had the early times with me.
Yeah, that gray bottle, the 100 proof.
Yeah, it was like a blue bottle with the crazy.
Oh, was it blue?
Design on it.
That's the one you can't get here.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
Kentucky.
That was really good.
Same company, same proof. Wow. Man, I tell you, man. Some of these low-end products are just so outstanding, man. It just boggles my mind. Like, you're not missing much if you can't get the highly allocated stuff. Like, this is a tremendous sipper. I don't know if I'll mix this with anything.
Heavily oaked.
Yeah.
Which I think is good in a case like this. It's not over-oaked or anything. It's just heavy. I mean, it's a lot more oak than you get with like a Pappy. You don't get you don't get this kind of oak. This is thick oak. And you can see the color is pretty deep too.
Yeah, it's dark.
That's dark.
That's why it's like, it's got to be older than 4 years. I don't know. I could be wrong. It could be 4.5 years. I don't know. Awesome.
Well, those extra chisel marks.
Yeah, those grooves.
Oaks it even more. It works.
That's tasty. Brown-Forman has done it again.
Now, why only Kentucky? Because they just make a small amount.
I'm assuming it is. I'm pretty sure it's in other markets.
Let me add just a few drops.
Just not here in Wisconsin.
There we go. Just a... What is it? Third of a teaspoon, maybe.
Man. Oh, Cooper's Craft.
Almost like cotton candy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on the, like...
Strawberry sweetness. Or some type of berry. A dark berry sweetness. Like you get with the cotton candy.
Like the flavoring that they put in the cotton candy.
It's usually something fruity.
Yeah.
It's like a berry or blueberry or something. Yeah. A sugary fruit.
Not like... Syrupy sweet, but like a dry sweet.
I'm thinking like sugar powder.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, a little bit of corn there. Yeah, a little bit of like dried corn husk.
Yeah, corny.
Old Oscar tickling those ivories. Good old Oscar.
I want an ivory glass.
An ivory glass? Okay.
A Glencairn made out of ivory. You know how cool that will look?
Uh-oh.
Even though you can't see what you're
that's
pouring.
That's a red flag.
But it'd be good, though.
A real ivory glass?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm pretty sure it's out there.
Oh, boy.
After this, we record this, I guarantee you I'll look on Amazon and be like, ivory made glass. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, we got these. They're going to have some type of cup made of ivory.
One of these days they're going to look back and go, "This." They're going to look back to this episode and be like, this is where it all started with Joelle. This is where, this is the tipping point. This is the first red flag.
He wanted an ivory whiskey glass. Why not? Why not?
Well, it's illegal.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, that's just one reason.
Yeah, really. I know.
But that never stopped you before.
No, it's never stopped me at all. No, no, no.
All right.
What would you rate this? $30.
Yeah. This is a...
Now, kind of rated if this was available in Wisconsin, like, all the time.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna... I forgot about the fact that it's not available here. If it was available here and I could just... Everybody could just grab a bottle anywhere. That would be... Well...
Will you put this over?
It's not gonna really... Yeah, no, no. Although I like certain things about this more than I do Old Forester. Because of that dryness and not... when it's always syrupy sweet like that, it's a turnoff for me. I don't like it. It's okay in a cocktail, of course, because cocktails are usually
I don't think I would put this in a cocktail.
But as a sipper... Maybe this would be a pick over Old Forester for me because of the dryness and the heavy oak. And you get a lot out of the nose.
Yeah, you do.
There's a lot going on there.
It's good.
It is not just a one-dimensional, boring whiskey.
For sure.
83.5.
I'm doing 85.
85?
Because of the price.
Yeah.
30-35. It's hard to beat.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff is, yeah, you always bring, your low ends are always good low ends.
I try to search for good low ends that people don't give the credit to, but even though I have a lot of allocated stuff in my collection, I mean, there's a lot of low end stuff that you can buy on the shelf that you don't have to break the wallet.
What else is like this available here that is dry like that, but heavily oaked and at that price and at 100 proof? It's a lot of parameters I'm throwing at you, but...
At 100 proof? I don't know. I'll say... I probably can't go into the 100 proof region, but as far as the same complexity... with the dryness and all this stuff, I'm gonna have to say like Elijah Craig.
Yeah,
because that's probably the 94 proof. It used to be a 12-year age stated product, but now I think it's rumored to be 8 to 9, something like that.
Yeah, okay, a little less oak in Elijah Craig, but still the dryness. It's not sweet.
I can't think of anything else like you were saying about Old Forester. It doesn't have that dryness.
What is this date on this thing? 1945. Established 1945, Louisville, Kentucky. B.F. Cooperage.
Yeah, Burrell Foreman, you done it again.
Yeah.
You guys didn't go to Old Forester when we were in Kentucky, right?
No. What about the high end of Brown Foreman? What's on their high end that is like
so this? They got some high end Woodford products and also some
like the double oaked or higher than that?
They got a double oaked.
Really?
Yeah. And then they got some master collections for Woodford. The thing is about it though, they still stay at that 90.4 proof or something.
Yeah.
Now they do come out with a batch proof, which is a barrel proof version of Woodford, which is I had a chance to get that, but I had a choice of picking that and some other ones and that E.H. Taylor barrel proof when I was in a raffle.
Yeah.
And I was like, barrel proof E.H. Taylor or barrel proof Woodford Reserve? And I was like, I got to go with the E.H. Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got that. And then
Old Forester. Yeah, I forgot about Woodford.
Old Forester has a some high barrel proof stuff. Like they got a barrel proof bourbon and a rye that I do have, which we need to review. But they have another one called the Presidential's Choice, and then the Birthday Bourbon, Old Forester. Those are the high ends right there. And then when you think about Jack Daniels,
yeah,
we've had.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
We have reviewed some of the high ends for those. Fortunately,
I'm gonna have to look into getting a Woodford, like a double oaked or a like a higher end, like a master reserve or whatever you were saying.
Yeah, they're hard to come by.
I gotta look for those.
Like that double oak is like part of their 117s series. They all come in like 375s, but it's like distillery release only. But we never went to Woodford. Like the next time we do a Kentucky trip,
I'd like to go to Woodford.
Go to some different places.
Yeah.
Give them the shot.
All right.
Then go back to Buffalo Trace again.
Definitely.
And Starlight.
And this time buy some Buffalo Trace.
Yeah. Definitely going to go to Starlight again. But yeah. Brown Foreman. Good. And apparently, Brown Foreman, they own Glendronic too. So.
Same part of the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate owned. All right, you ready for the the high end?
Yeah, let's roll into the high end. So Dylan has a high end.
Ichiros. Ichiros. Malt and grain whiskey blend. Let me just read what it says here. This is from Japan. This whiskey is matured by Ichiro Okuto, founder of the Chichibu Distillery. He travels to find casks to perfect his product. In addition to his Hanyu single malt and Chichibu single malt, this is worldwide whiskey. So, he is being honest about this, as far as what's in this bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It's whiskeys from all over the world.
And he's blending it.
And Japanese, perhaps.
And he's and Japanese?
He's, perhaps, but he doesn't say anything about the...
So, he's the Japanese version of Dixon Dead?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. He's a blender. He travels the world looking for good casks of whiskeys. And I've It's about a third full. I've had this maybe a year and a half or more.
Tell me the
more.
Specs about this, other than the blending. Like, as far as price and...
Oh, it also says on the back, malt and grain whiskey, spelled with a, without an E, for USA. So specifically for the US, 46.5%.
Okay. I can get down with it.
Yeah, so this Chichibu Distillery, they make their own whiskey too. So maybe there's some of that, or maybe there's most of that is in here, and he just uses other whiskey to, you know, blend. Steer it one way or the other.
Yeah, gotcha.
All right, enough talking.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for you to pull out or surprise me with that Balvenie Portwood.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that's all ganja. Well, I'm sorry.
No. With that, you know...
You said it was going to take some time.
The longer you wait, the better it gets. That's just the way old Balvenies work.
I'm going to take your word for that, because that Spring Bank 15 year...
It was worth the wait.
Yeah, it was worth the wait.
Yeah. Then you would have not gotten that if it was just 2 inches down in the bottle.
Oh, no, yeah.
It needed that time.
It's kind of similar to that Kentucky Owl that I had earlier. Not the bourbon.
Oh, yeah.
Not the rye. The Japan collaboration.
Japanese Kentucky Owl.
To Kosu or whatever it's called. Takashi or whatever it's called.
I don't know.
As far as the nose is concerned. I'm not getting that corn put in like I did with that, though.
No. Oh, this is... I haven't had this in a long time.
Man, so light.
Yeah, this is light.
A beautiful light. Like a light butter biscuit. Man. And you sprinkle some brown sugar on it. Nice and toasty.
Almost getting a... Yeah, you know what steamed edamame smells like?
Yeah.
Like there's some kind of green vegetable.
What, they put some butter on the edamame? You smell the bowl.
Now, when I first opened this, it was different than this. This has improved a lot. And I could swear, and I still may taste it, but I could have sworn that they put, or one of the whiskeys he found in his travels around the world was Redbreast.
12?
Or the single, the barrel proof Redbreast.
Oh, the cask strength.
Cask strength, yeah.
I'm getting some spiciness on the back end of that. This right here is... This is good. This is great.
It's...
Yeah, this is a good high-end right here.
It doesn't taste as light as it smells.
No.
Yeah.
It's flavorful.
Yeah, it's flavorful.
Buttery biscuits.
Yeah, it's unique. There's nothing quite like this.
Spice on the back end.
I'm not really picking up that red breast like I used to be able to. But it does have a, like, you know how Irish whiskeys do have a lightness about them in the nose. Like they don't just hit you across the face and be like, you know, I'm intense. They're all kind of light in the nose.
This is good. So what's this guy's name again?
Ichiro Akuto.
Okay.
A-K-U-T-O.
I'm not going to pronounce that or repeat that, but whatever Dylan said his name is. Hey, Dixon, Detman, I'm pretty sure this podcast may not even reach your ears. Yeah. Well, but if you can reach out to this guy, or he can reach out to you, and you guys do a collaboration together, I won't be mad. Because this is phenomenal.
You like it, huh?
Yeah. And this is classified as Japanese, right?
It's
not really.
Let's see.
Is it a Japanese blend, or...
Oh, yeah, it says, product produced and bottled by Venture Whiskey Limited, Japan.
Telling you, phenomenal. This is good.
Wow, this one took a long time to get to this point. Like, it took over a year of change.
Man, it's so buttery, man. Buttery.
Yeah.
It's like butter pecan ice cream.
It's very strange how the nose is. You'd think it's going to be, oh, there's not going to be much to this whiskey. And then you taste it. And it...
Me, on the other hand, I love the nose.
It's got the spice.
Yeah. You don't pick up the spice at all on the nose. The nose, I think, is glorious.
Yeah, I like the nose. What I'm saying is it's just light.
Yeah.
It's just lighter.
Yeah,
you know?
It just seems like it's just going to be light.
It's delicate.
Because there's a lot of single malts that we probably have reviewed that had this kind of nose, and you drink it, and you're like, okay, where's the flavor? It's just non-existent.
It's kind of dry. There's a... Development is nice and long. And the finish just tapers off. It's good. Must be that light nose has to do with the grain in the whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of grain is typically lighter, but then that malt in there.
Oh, that's great. I don't know what more I can say about this other than it being a outstanding product, even though you said that it took longer to get to where it's at.
Yeah.
But that's just any bottle of whiskey, usually.
Yeah, some more
than
others.
Every once in a while, you do get those ones that have like a crazy...
You just think it's like you wasted all your money.
Yeah.
You put it away.
From a neck pour. Sometimes neck pours are not the best. Sometimes they can blow you away. And then it gets better over time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. And then there's some that are like, oh, okay. That was kind of mid. And then over time, it just opens up. And
then
you're
like,
that's what everyone was talking about.
This is not like what I... Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta give those bottles time, man.
Well, like, the older Belvinis are like that, and this one is like that for sure, and it literally took over a year to get to this point. Now.
Price?
That's just what I was gonna bring up. What do you think it costs?
I'm gonna say 80.
$100. Yeah.
Okay.
$100.
So $20 off. Okay. That kind of changes my rating just a tad bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to mark it 2 points off of what I was going to originally going to score it. If it was at $80.
$80, yeah. Or 60.
I hate to do it.
Or 65 bucks.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
If it was 65 bucks... It'll probably be 4 points off than what I was going to agree to.
Yeah, this is the thing about this, is the price.
Okay.
And the fact that it took so long for it to come around.
Gotcha.
Does lower the you know, the ranking for me.
But I'm going to give it a good rating, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 88.
88?
Yeah, for me. For what it is now. If
yeah.
it was at $80, even though I know it was a long process of about getting to where it is now, my original score was going to be 90.
No kidding.
And then when you were saying $65, if it would have been that, I would have gave it a 92. But 88 for what it is now at $100. If it came out this bottle for what it is now at $100, I would give it a 90. But since you said it took a while or whatever, but what it is now, I give it an 88.
Yeah.
I can't give it an 85 because it's a really good whiskey.
I'm almost getting a cake on the nose now. Yeah.
I mean, I could have did 87.5, but this guy's blending.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work. Blending is one of the hardest things.
You're not kidding.
We both
and know that. It changes on you. So how do you blend and then know what it's going to taste like 6 months later?
He probably doesn't.
Right.
He probably doesn't. Because
you have to just taste it as you go.
He's probably going from the initial
blend, how it tastes.
He's probably right like us. Like, oh, wait.
Wow, this changed. For the better.
I did good.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm giving the 88. It's blended. And he's taking other whiskeys and making I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's making something. And most it's tough, likely, man. It's not really clear, but what is in this bottle, but mm-hmm. most likely they're also distilling their own stuff, so from their own distillery, so you know, that's hard to do. That's talent. I'm gonna say it's an 86 for me. Because of the price and it took so long. Otherwise it'd been higher. Like if I were to rate this as it is right now, it'd be different. Mm. It might be an 88.
Yeah. I'm sticking with the 88. Gotta give shout outs to the blenders, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
They go through it.
And it's a real basic label. And it is another one of those labels where
yeah.
It's almost like cat's like eye. A wine bottle.
It's like cat's eye.
With that painted lettering.
Mm-hmm. Cat's Eye Distillery. With their generic labels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clear bottle, white label. With black writing.
With just a tiny little leaf thing going on. Non-chill filtered, no color. Non-colored.
Well, we can see that.
Yeah, it's pretty light looking.
Yeah.
But,
it's like tap water with rust.
It's like if you want a dessert like malt, but you want it to be dry. No, yeah, it's not sweet.
Yeah. I could pour this over some ice cream. Well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Kudos to him.
Got a 86 and an 88.
Mm-hmm.
We got an 83 and an 83.5 and a 85.
Mm-hmm. We're always remotely somewhat close. Sometimes we're like right.
Yeah.
Right there.
It's funny how when it comes to malts, some of the things you like and the things I like, they're different. And I'm like, this is not going to be great, and then you taste it and you're like, whoa, I love this.
Hey, the beauty, man, of this podcast.
Yeah,
you never know what you're gonna get.
Yeah,
you never know what you're gonna expect.
Surprised.
We surprise ourselves. One thing we could say, not to demolish them again or break their spirits.
Oh no,
Balcones. We're all on the same level on that one. But there's still a chance for them to throw it back in our face.
Okay.
They're going to have one product out there. We're going to be like, okay, we were wrong.
Yeah. And they're going to do that. They're going to make something. They're going to find something that they can make that it works better than almost anybody else. Just because of their process and climate and whatever. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be something. I don't know what. But.
Yeah.
Every distillery has their day.
Yeah.
They're coming out.
They'll find something. They're brand new, right? When did they open up? I mean, relatively brand new. Like, yeah. The last 10, 15 years?
Yeah. I would say last 10, probably.
Right.
2012? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even later than that. But hey, gotta start somewhere.
Yep.
Taking on malt.
Do you know of any distilleries who came on the scene and then they're like 2 years later folded? Or that just doesn't happen?
I don't think that happens, man. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The locals all go for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got these breweries now. Especially here in the Midwest, as far as breweries. So we've got Eagle Park. They have their own distillate now, even though they source, I do think. New Holland. Which was a brewery. I mean, still is a brewery, but they got liquor or bourbon or whatever. There's a place in Indiana called, what is it, 18th Street Brewery? And now they're doing hard stuff too. So.
Yeah. It's everywhere. It's popping up everywhere.
Yeah. I don't think. Yeah, I don't know. Any distilleries that have flopped so far, especially in the craft world.
You know that Great Lakes Distillery here in town? I toured them when they were brand new. And I'm not a fan of them either. Yeah. It's like, first of all, they just started making whiskey, and their rum, I did not like at all. It was like Dan's rum.
I hear their absinthe is amazing.
Yeah, now that I like.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Is great. See, that's the thing about distilleries.
But I never think of them.
Yeah.
And they sell it in a tiny little bottle for $30.
I will say that it's so hard for like up and coming distilleries to fold, especially if you grew up in a state or a city like this, like Wisconsin, Milwaukee, whatever. They like to stick with their homegrown people.
That's absolutely.
So whatever bar you walk into, you're going to see Kinnickinnick.
That's what I was just going to say. So it's everywhere.
I'm assuming that whatever craft distillery that's in other people's states.
They're doing the same thing.
They're probably doing the same thing. Yeah. Just because it comes from them.
Yep.
Whatever brewery that wants to make a barrel-aged beer, they're going to go to that spot. Even though they're going to go to the bigger people like Buffalo Trace or whatever, but. You know, it's going to speak volumes to people that are local. Like, hey, local brewery, collaborate with the local distillery.
Mm-hmm.
Even though their stuff is not that great, but hey, their beer was aged in one of their bourbon barrels or their gin barrel or whatever. So, I would say that distilleries
generally do not fold.
They don't fold. Their starting up process is tough. Because what do you sell when you're not sourcing?
It's always vodka and gin.
Yeah.
It's always that.
And you gotta wait at least 4 years to get a bourbon. Unless you're in Texas, depending on your climate or whatever. Or unless you source.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that works out either. Like, how much do you have to dig yourself in a hole to source from someone to keep up before your own product comes out? And I always think That's a tough field to play.
Oh, that's got to be a hard waiting game.
What if people like the source product better, and then your actual product comes out and is not as good as the stuff that you sourced?
Yeah.
It's tough. It's almost like you should just stay with the source product.
Because, you know, you can rely on that. You know, you can get the prices. It's going to be consistent stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that was the beauty for Dancing Goat here. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, they're sourced from MGP, yeah, and
it works.
They even don't shy away from it. They say that it's MGP whiskey.
Yeah.
Plus, they do make it better. I mean, they do extra stuff to make it, like, finish it and other stuff.
Yeah.
They're scientists with it. Yeah. Even though it's not their whiskey, but they do stuff to make it their own at the same time.
And because they're not producing so much volume, they can probably get a handful of barrels that are really special, but there's no way you could get that at the volume that other people are producing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but that's the only thing. Like, I get when you're a craft distillery and you got a source to keep up, to put your name out there until your own product comes out, then I'm like, man, what if your product is not as good as from the, you know, the company that you were sourcing from? So I always think that it's better to source. But then you have people like Starlight. They never source, but at the same time, they had opportunities for their product to get to bourbon because they did wine, they did apple brandy, and all that stuff. I think that's where they started off at. Mm-hmm. So they already had products that cemented them enough time to for their, you know, the bourbon and all that stuff to grow.
Imagine how hard that would be to wait. You know,
you're anxious.
A whiskey, and you're like, well, I can't just make one barrel and wait 4 years. You know, I have to be all in.
But if you got a farm like they got, shoot. You got the time, especially if you're wine and your apple brandy or whatever that they were selling was good in their market. And they're like, you know what? Let's do bourbon too. And they're doing it at a high rate.
I wonder if there's a position where you are a master blender or a distiller or were. But you've got so much experience. All you do now is travel around helping people get set up and saying, you know, holding their hand a little bit, showing them the ropes and showing them this is how it all works at the beginning. And you just got to trust the process. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because otherwise, how are you going to learn that? I mean, that must be a tough, tough 4 years.
It's stressful. I mean, think about Dixon Detman when we're talking about blenders here for what we just reviewed from the guy from Japan here.
Yeah.
You're in a company that's sourced. Even though it's sourced, you got a guy that can blend out of his mind.
Yeah.
Established himself with Kentucky Owl, then he's like, you know what? I want to do my own thing. I'm going to start my own brand. But like, wait, what was wrong with... I mean, I don't know, but at the same time, I was like, man, didn't he have himself pretty established with Kentucky Owl? And for him to be like, you know what? I want to do my own thing and do the 2XO. And when he was doing it, I was like, when would that moment ever get here? And it's here. And he has two blends out already. And I'm like...
Have you had them?
The first one, Phoenix.
And? Didn't I... Is that
haven't
one?
Had
no,
it
I
yet.
Haven't.
You haven't had it yet.
Okay.
Thumbs up.
It's good, of course, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from what we had from, like, Bastard Kentucky Owl Rye or whatever, not close to that. But for him to do something 100 proof, even though it's $100 for the bottle, but it's,
really?
it's in that craft market.
Yeah.
He hasn't. It's not a big facility. The craft distilleries are the more expensive products. They're not going to have something that's $29.
Well, it's still priced right because of that Kentucky Ale I bought, 130. So it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. And it's the same proof. Anyway.
That's our little, episode.
The camera. We're gonna microphone still rolling.
Yeah, microphone still rolling. That was a nice conversation. We have to vent. I always wanted to talk about that. Like, you know. I mean, we didn't plan on talking about that, but yeah. How craft distilleries get their start with the sourcing. And then you got to have some crazy faith if you want to have your own distillate, but you're already sourcing in the meantime.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough to do. You got to have faith in your distillate.
Yeah.
To cover from what you're sourcing. Like, if you're sourcing from NGP, you got to be a heck of a...
I think that's nice that they sell White Dog, because then people can buy Buffalo Trace White Dog and be like, okay, it starts out like this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with just 4 years and but the like right you said, barrels.
I give kudos to the people that didn't even budge to try to source. Like, I don't think Driftless Glen did it. J. Henry here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. La Crosse.
Mm-hmm.
I think they started off like you were saying, like, gin. Well, let me just do gin vodka.
Interesting stuff, though.
And just be patient.
Regular gin.
Let's experiment with the gin and vodka and wait 4 years until, you know.
Until we got a bourbon.
I don't know if J. Henry did that or not, because I don't think they got a vodka or a gin. I think they just got strictly bourbon, but...
I don't even know if they're going to... If they do make bourbon, it might be coming out soon if it's not already out.
Yeah.
Because they've been open for... Well, no, it hasn't.
Man,
it hasn't been 4 years, I don't think.
I know we're going to have some stuff, and you're going to have some stuff going on for a while, depending on the next couple of weeks. But we got to go to Twisted Path, because they're coming out with some stuff. Because they make their own stuff. Twisted Path, to my knowledge. And that's here downtown in Milwaukee.
Oh, right. We were going to tour that, right?
Yeah.
Because I've been there and had mixed drink.
And their cocktails are crazy from what I hear. I haven't been there yet.
They're good.
I haven't been there yet. Sounds like we have some company.
Yeah, somebody's walking around.
It's a party upstairs.
All right,
man. We'll catch you guys on the flip side.
On the next episode. See ya.